often you've heard me speak about finding a balance between energy or effort and rest or relaxation in the meditation practice. Know from your own experience that mobilizing too much effort can leave you tight and tense. It is also likely to engender unnecessary self-judgment, leading you to be discouraged about your practice. And you know that allowing an excess of relaxation to take hold often results in drowsiness and a sort of sloppiness of mind. Tonight, we take time to explore an approach or a dynamic, a lesson, that typifies the balance between energy and relaxation. This is a lesson we could call learning to play your edge. Your edge can show up in many forms. Picture yourself on a Monday morning beginning your week. A coworker, coming in tired and cranky, makes a statement that really yanks your chain. You start to react defensively, and then, just for a moment, recall something you once learned about nonviolent communication, about looking for the being behind the words, and the need or the pain that may be there. The urge is strong to zing a zappy one-liner, but it's too late. You now have a choice. You have come up against your edge. Or a friend wants you to join her trekking in Nepal. You'd love to go, but looking down from great heights leaves you dizzy and weak. You know that this trip would repeatedly bring you face to face with your deepest fears. Or maybe you meet your edge at home when boredom has set in. You're not really hungry, but by habit, your feet insist on walking toward the refrigerator. You open the door. Looking right over the carrots and the orange, your gaze settles on the chocolate fudge cookies. Just one won't hurt. Your hand picks up the entire bag. Your feet walk to the TV and you settle in. Just before you turn on the movie, you become aware that you have bolted two cookies and are about to swallow the third. In this moment of awareness, you have come up against your edge. Now, surely one of these scenarios has a ring of familiarity. We live in the same world and we are not that different from one another. If we are attentive, we see that life is continually bringing us choices, opportunities either to react out of deep conditioning or to step aside, outside the habitual and look at other possibilities. This is not to say that all of our usual responses are somehow undesirable, only that every moment brings a choice, and frequently a clear challenge at our edge. I was already musing over this topic a couple of weeks ago when Howard Mason brought us provocative challenges from the book Moral Imagination by John Paul Lederach. We were invited, for example, to consider talking in depth with one another, with a person with whom we deeply disagree, or to take a risk in the service of some life-affirming change for ourselves or for the world. Shodron sees this as the real meaning of renunciation, a word from which we often recoil in dismay. From her book, The Wisdom of No Escape, she says, renunciation does not have to be regarded as negative. I was taught that it has to do with letting go of holding back. What one is renouncing is closing down and shutting off from life. You could say that renunciation is the same thing as opening to the teachings of the present moment. Finding ourselves on our edge assumes that we have reached a point of discomfort or insecurity. Somehow, in some way, the very next act or word will reveal to us something about how far we have come, or not. How disconcerting. How pregnant with possibility. And what a ripe condition for learning. What's really striking is that this is the very phenomenon we meet again and again in sitting practice. With each breath, we are challenged to stay, keep the body still, and open to the moment-to-moment change of experience. The teaching is that rather than reject anything, we are to practice receiving each moment as a gift, with as much love and tenderness as we can. In Vipassana practice, we are actually training for renunciation in its true sense, training for living out life on our continually shifting edge. Meditation practice, by its very nature, brings us steadily closer to our edges. As the mind stills and the view clears, we see more directly where we are not. These insights may seem mundane or unimportant, but they combine to forge an understanding that is huge in its import. On a recent retreat, I saw myself licking my lips. I didn't recall the decision or even the experience of dryness. But at some point, dryness registered and a judgment was made that this was unacceptable and needed to be tweaked or fixed. I acted out of automatic aversion without even knowing I had done so until the act was in progress. The same retreat, I saw others in the same predicament, moving an arm or hand or foot just a bit so that, as we say, then I can meditate. We think it won't matter, but it does matter. What matters is the automaticity of the reaction. In fact, in that moment, the restlessness, the urge to fix or tweak, is your meditation. For there is no experience which is unacceptable to the open heart. Staying our edge in formal sitting practice is simply the willingness to stay with whatever emerges in the moment. So as we sit, we increasingly see the mind as it uses any ruse to flee from or to refuse the present moment. Seeing that we have refuged our edge is not a weakness. It's a moment of mindfulness and a sign of aliveness or openness. It takes a lot of metta, a lot of tenderness, to play our edge in meditation. Ashodran again. Whenever you realize you have met your edge, you're scared and you're frozen and you're blocked, you're able to recognize it because you open enough to see what's happening. It's already a sign of your aliveness and the fact that you've shed a lot that you can see so clearly and so vividly. Rather than think you've made a mistake, you can acknowledge the present moment and its teaching. Well, whether it's formal sitting practice or in everyday life, there are some qualities that will serve us well in playing our edge. Is courage. Described as the willingness to abide in the insecure place, not knowing, continually opening to the changes that come, trusting basic goodness. This is a story told by Rabbi Wayne Dosick in Personal Journey from Adversity to Renewal. Childhood polio left Itzhak Perlman able to walk only with braces on both legs and crutches. When Perlman plays at a concert, the journey from the wings to the center of the stage is long and slow. Yet, when he plays, his talent transcends any thought of physical challenge. Perlman was scheduled to play a difficult, challenging violin concerto. In the middle of the performance, one of the strings on his violin snapped with a rifle-like popping noise that filled the entire auditorium. The orchestra immediately stopped playing, and the audience held its collective breath. The assumption was that he would have to put on his braces, pick up his crutches, and leave the stage. Either that or someone would have to come out with another string or replace the violin. After a brief pause, Perlman set his violin under his chin and signaled to the conductor to begin. One person in the audience reported what happened. "I know it is impossible to play a violin concerto with only three strings. I know that, and so do you. But that night, Itzhak Perlman refused to know it. You could see him modulating, changing, and recomposing in his head. At one point, it sounded as if he were retuning the strings to get a new sound that had never been heard before. When he finished, there was an awesome silence that filled the room. Then people rose and cheered. Perlman smiled, wiped his brow, and raised the bow of his violin to quiet them. He spoke, not boastfully, but quietly in a pensive tone. You know, sometimes it is the artist's task to find out how much music you can still make with what you have left." Rich. Honesty. The willingness to see and acknowledge the truth that comes from the heart, even or especially if it's inconvenient or uncomfortable. Decision, an on-the-spot diligence of attention that arises with the alert mind. Faithfulness, this soft, light quality of mind. Holding lightly our views, our self-image, not taking ourselves so seriously. Letting go and allowing a sense of humor to grow. Quality of the warrior, which involves focus, intention, and persistence. Discipline in the sense of remembering what you really want. Georgia O'Keeffe said, "I've been absolutely terrified every moment of my life, and I've never let it keep me from doing a single thing I wanted to do." Watch the mind for limit setting, saying you can't do this or that. Usually, this comes in the form of a story of fear, of what if. This is constricting for the life experience, and our buy-in reinforces the fear. You might do well to ask yourself, who is it that's afraid? Actually, the more we play our edge, the more fearless we become, pushing back the prison bars that keep our lives small and circumscribed. We come to see the whole dance, our bond with all other beings, and the incredible gift of life itself. So, what would it be for you to play your edge in the coming weeks and months? Staying still on the cushion? Finding and registering for a retreat? Renewing contact with someone, saying, "I'm sorry"? Giving away something precious? Saying, "I love you"? Wake up wholeheartedly to it all. Do it now, while you have this moment. William Blake from Songs of Experience. So he took his wings and fled. Then the morn blushed rosy red. I dried my tears and armed my fears with 10,000 shields and spears. Soon my angel came again. I was armed, he came in vain. For the time of youth was fled, and gray hairs were on my head. This from an unknown author. Life is a rush into the unknown. You can duck down and hope nothing hits you, or stand up as tall as you can and show it your teeth and say, "Dish it up, baby, and don't be stingy with the jalapenos." Let's close with a story from Pema Chodron. She talks about her experience living on Cape Breton. She says, "The wilder the weather is, the more the ravens love it. They have the time of their lives in the winter, when the wind gets much stronger and there's lots of ice and snow. They challenge the wind. They get up on tops of the trees and hold on with their claws, and then they grab on with their beaks as well. At some point, they just let go into the wind and let it blow them away. Then they play on it. They float on it. After a while, they'll go back to the tree and start over. It's a game. Once I saw them in an incredible hurricane velocity wind, grabbing each other's feet and dropping and then letting go and flying out. It was like a circus act. The animals and the plants here on Cape Breton are hardy and fearless and playful and joyful. The elements have strengthened them. In order to exist here, they have had to develop a zest for challenge and life. As you can see, it adds up to tremendous beauty and inspiration and uplifted feeling." The same goes for us.